Welcome to Commodore Hour. Over the next 60 minutes, we'll break down the latest in Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt athletics. Regions, get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit regions.com/anchor down to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford Dealers. Now, here's your host, Kevin Ingram.
And welcome into another edition of Commodore Hour on what's turned out to be a nice Monday in the Music City. Great to have you with us. And coming up on tonight's show, we'll visit with Coach Tim Corbin from Vanderbilt Baseball here shortly. Also, soccer coach Darren Ambrose coming up at 6:30, and then a little bit later on the show, our Black and Gold Club segment for the night will feature former football player Ken Hammond. So looking forward to visiting with Ken a little bit later on in the show. Speaking of baseball, tough series over the weekend at Florida. I just got back to Tennessee this morning as Commodores dropped 2 out of 3, 1-11-7 on Friday, lost 11-8 on Saturday, and then 5-3 yesterday. And Vanderbilt now sits at 14-7 in the SEC and 32-9 overall, still ranked number 2 in the D1 baseball rankings. And a little bit of news today with Vanderbilt heading up to Louisville to play tomorrow. That game time has been changed. It will now be a 3 o'clock Central Time, 4 Eastern start time for Vanderbilt and Louisville, with some bad weather in the forecast up in Kentucky tomorrow. We'll take a quick break, come back with Coach Tim Corbin after this. This is Commodore Hour. It's brought to you in part by the Tennessee Lottery. The Tennessee Education Lottery is proud to have raised more than $5.5 billion to support education programs in Tennessee. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. Welcome back. This is Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us on this Monday night. Let's bring in Vanderbilt head baseball coach Tim Corbin. His team played at Florida over the weekend. Commodores won 11-7 on Friday, lost 11-8 Saturday, and 5-3 in a tough one yesterday. Coach, how you doing this evening?
Doing fine.
Game time change for tomorrow. Should mention that again, 3 o'clock Central, 4 o'clock Eastern for Vanderbilt and Louisville. I guess just to try to stay ahead of the weather as much as possible tomorrow.
I mean, if you can do it, I mean, that's God's plan. That's not ours. So we'll just do what we have to do. And Louisville's the home team, so we'll move with them.
As far as yesterday, just one of those games where you kept sort of waiting for the big hit and it never came, especially with big chances in the sixth and seventh to potentially tie the game.
Yeah, 5, 6, and 7, really. I mean, I thought we had opportunities, you know, at those points. We had set ourselves up with leadoff runners and multiple runner situations in all three innings with less than 2 outs, and we just came away with 2 runs. And I felt like, and I think the kids did too, felt like the momentum was going to move in our direction. But we just couldn't muster the big hit, as you said. And, you know, kids are trying. Sometimes that gets in the way too, because you're trying to move the ball. You're trying to do some great things for your team, and you come up short. So that was a case where you have to give the credit to Florida, because they outpitched our barrels, and I thought they executed pretty well. Leftwich in particular, I thought he was very good at the end of the game. He commanded the fastball in the outer half of the plate, and we were just off of it. So, yeah, you have to give them the credit.
How impressive was Enrique Bradfield yesterday? 4 hits, an RBI in his other at bat, and a steal. Just really swung the bat well in the series at 8 hits and 4 RBIs and 4 out of 4 in the stolen base department.
Well, you know, I thought he set the tone the entire weekend. I mean, he comes out and gets a walk, his first at bat of the entire series, then steals second, then a double steal with he and Carter. And I think from that point forward, he played with a gear that you rarely see. He was on base. He was on base all 3 games, first hitter. That I think was probably indelible in everyone's brain, since he slid back to first base 3 times in one innings, and his uniform turned brown. So you could see what the opponent was doing. But yeah, he was certainly a very, very live wire the entire night or entire weekend.
And for all the water they put on the base pass, it did slow him down a whole lot. You know, and that's not the first time in baseball history the teams have tried to slow down a fast runner by affecting the field conditions. But as a coach, is there anything you can do if you feel like it's gone too far?
Yeah, I mean, speak up, which I did, you know, but I think I'm sure you can say something, but, you know, that's their prerogative. It's their field, and they can do with what they want. But, you know, it was just one of those situations. We had to work around it, and he did, and he was able to get to second base each time. So I credit Enrique.
I know the defense was a topic of conversation. You and I talked about it before the game yesterday. Did you feel better about how things went yesterday, even in a loss defensively?
Yeah, I thought we played more responsive defensively. I mean, we cut a runner down at third base early in the game. That Carter's play off of Butler that was hit to the backside. I mean, it was backhand. It went to the ground. It came up. He swung the throw. He was in the outfield. You know, he was on the grass, I should say. So that was a heck of a play and gave us a lot of momentum at the time. And then we turned the 4-6-3 in the eighth to end the inning. And I thought that was also going to give us some momentum too. But, I did. I thought that was a good response to Friday and Saturday, because Friday and Saturday were tough days for us defensively. We didn't help ourselves at all. And we didn't help the pitchers. We extended them, and that's really who we don't want to be, and I don't think we are, but, you know, we just didn't handle it well.
On that play Carter Young made in the seventh, where he went deep in the hole, as he described, and just made a rocket of a throw to end the inning, I mean, that doesn't just happen, does it? I mean, he works on that stuff all the time, as we've watched, you know, throughout the last couple of years that he's been here.
Yeah, and we've talked about it. I mean, he creates those plays in training all the time. And Carter only has one gear. I mean, he plays extremely hard defensively. And he plays hard offensively, too. But he's a self-made guy. I mean, he works on those plays. He loves playing defense. He's got a lot of confidence playing defense. And because of that, not only does he make the routine plays, but he can make those plays like that, which are hardly routine. And I would tell you that there's probably not a lot of shortstops in the college game that can make that play. So, he's a heck of a defensive player, and he's learning to play offense too. I don't want to short him on that too, because he certainly has given us a lot. But he's still learning in that area, as he is every area of college baseball.
Our guest is Coach Tim Corbin. Were you happy with the outings by Patrick Riley and Luke Murphy yesterday?
Yeah, I think you have to be. I mean, Murph gave us a pretty good run of it, too, on Friday night. He came in sixth inning with runners on first and second and gave up the hit. They were loaded. Then he struck out Armstrong, who previously had hit a home run. So that was a big moment at the time. And he got out of the seventh inning out of the jam, too, with kind of two miscue hits. And then certainly yesterday, yeah. I mean, he and Riles gave us five innings of one hit ball and kept them off the scoreboard. I mean, they had scored all five in four innings, and we held them down. And I felt like at that point it reminded me and a little bit reminiscent of what Mississippi State could have been, because we held them down after they jumped out, and then we just couldn't add on.
In some ways, you know, in the game two on Saturday, did that long outing by Tommy Mace almost help them win two games, and that their bullpen was, you know, at pretty full strength going into Sunday?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you want to get Scott and Leftwich out there, that would, you know, if we get them out there a little bit earlier, that would help. I mean, they kind of did that to us with Maldonado. I mean, we had to go to the pen, unfortunately, late in the game where the game was spread, but we had to win the game. And, you know, we didn't burn Maldonado because Maldonado was ready to come back yesterday. But at the same time, you know, 37 bullets is a lot in a pitcher's arm, and we hesitate doing that. But, yeah, you're right. They did a good job at that. And I think that was, you know, we did a good job with Mace in the first four innings. We just couldn't finish him off. And there again, you got to give credit to Tommy. He's, you know, he did a nice job being an older kid. He got through those moments, and he really took his team deep into that ball game, actually the eighth inning. So he did a nice job.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more with Coach Tim Corbin in just a moment. This is Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. Welcome back. This is Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us. It's brought to you by Gupton Jeep, your Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram headquarters. Gupton Jeep has been serving Middle Tennessee for over 59 years. Coach Tim Corbin is our guest, and if you're just tuning in, Vanderbilt and Louisville has been moved up to a 3 o'clock Central, 4 Eastern time start tomorrow up in Louisville due to the weather situation. Tim, as far as Isaiah Thomas, he homered again yesterday, had a couple of them in the series, had 5 hits. You moved him up in the lineup. You liking how he's looking at the plate?
Yes, I think his swings are, to me, there's a little bit more clarity in Isaiah, a little bit more confidence, and, you know, that's what you get. You know, when kids have that type of clarity, they seem to move and organize themselves well and hit the ball more on the barrel of the bat. He's doing that. What I think I see besides the long balls, hitting the ball the other way. I mean, he had 2 hard hit balls the other way. He shot a ball early, and I think it was Friday's game. He flew out to center field, and I felt like he was starting to put at bats together. So good for him. And I'll tell you, you know, Bradfield's exciting on the bases, but IT is a very good base runner. He loves to run the bases, and getting him on base really, really helps our cause.
One thing people don't see very often, he has a great arm in right field, doesn't he? And that ball, I think it was in yesterday's game, hit off the wall in the corner. He got to it pretty fast, and the guy stopped at first base. He would have been out by 20 feet if he tried to go to second.
Yeah, I mean, that was a heck of a play. I mean, he's got a very good arm, and it's got a lot of carry to it. It's best arm in the outfield. So there is a lot of things that young kid can do, and he certainly is starting to play with a lot more confidence.
Going back to Friday, how did you feel like Kamar pitched on a night where we experienced hot and humid weather for maybe the first time all season?
Yeah, I thought that was a grind for him. I thought it was tough to get through 5 innings. He finished well after the long fifth and then struck out the next 2 hitters, but none of it came easy. I mean, he was working behind in counts. Now he was able to work out of them because of his competitiveness and his stuff. But yeah, that was the first time I felt like there wasn't an easy inning. And there wasn't a 1-2-3 inning where he could sit in the dugout for a while. And it was a humid night for sure. And I think everyone felt that. But certainly when you're on the mound and you're trying to produce pitches, that was a little bit more difficult for him. But you know what you're getting with that kid. You're always going to get very good effort and very good competitiveness. And he was able to do that.
Yeah, 1-2-3 innings were hard to come by in the whole series. How can Jack Leiter get back on track after a couple rough starts here?
Well, he can just because he is who he is. I mean, he's one of those kids that he just hadn't been able to execute as well as he did initially. But I say he is who he is because he's got very good stuff and he's a very good competitor himself. And he'll get back to where he is. I think the thing about Jack that unfortunately he's not afforded this opportunity. He's not afforded the opportunity to grow. You know, it's like the kid comes in here as a freshman, then all of a sudden, even before our season starts, he doesn't want any of that. You know, he just wants to be a college student, but the celebration of who he is and so on. And, you know, I think a lot of times that's unfortunate because it is fortunate and unfortunate. It's fortunate because he's celebrated for a reason. But I think the other piece of him is he's not perfect yet. You know, none of the pitchers are, even when they become juniors, but Gray and Minor and Price and all the good ones we've ever had, they were afforded an opportunity to be sophomores and work through some struggles like he has. And those struggles are going to make him better. And he's very much on it. He's one of those kids that he doesn't, you know, he feels like he lets his team down. And I appreciate that about him. But at the same time, it's one of those things that it motivates him too. And it motivates him to get better. So he'll find his way back. It's more about execution than anything else.
Yeah, and Brooks and I have talked about that very thing. You know, he comes out and pitches a no-hitter in his first SEC start and then has 22 hitless innings. And, you know, the expectations almost get just out of whack. And yeah, that's a whole lot to live up to, isn't it?
And, you know, in today's world it is. I mean, that's the unfortunate thing. I mean, that was a great moment and no one's going to take that back. But at the same time, replicating perfect performances is that's unrealistic. I mean, he's a very good pitcher and he will continue to be, but at the same time, expectations like that are completely out of whack. He's just got to do what he needs to do and none of these kids have to be perfect in order to have good success.
The pitching has been a little shorthanded due to injuries. Are you hoping to be any healthier this week or at least in the near future?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I hope we can get Smitty back a little bit and see what we get out of him. But there again, you know, when you haven't pitched, there's a buildup that has to take place because you don't want to set him back another couple of steps. So we'll just see. I hope so. But at the same time, we've got pitchers. Granted, they don't have a lot of experience, but you know what? That's why they're here, and they've got to pitch, and they've got to gain some experience. So hopefully we'll be able to do that.
Going to give Thomas Schultz the ball again tomorrow?
Undecided right now. Okay. Yeah, I think we're just going to kind of wait and see what we're going to do that way. We've got several options, but we're undecided on what we're going to do.
Has Louisville become maybe the best non-conference rivalry for this team over the last, say, decade or so with, you know, really good regular season matchups, but also some very meaningful wins in the postseason for both sides against one another?
Yes, because we're within reasonable distance of one another. They're Kentucky, we're Tennessee, they're ACC, we're SEC. It seems like every time we turn around in the postseason, we're playing them. We played them three times in Omaha. Between 2009, 2010, it just didn't even, I felt like we couldn't get rid of them, you know, and they couldn't get rid of them. We were just running into each other. And those games were fierce. I mean, they're very fierce. But you know what? That's why it became the Battle of the Barrel. In 2012, we decided to do something about it and make it add some fun to it. And we did. But that's, you know, you get that intensity with these games. And Coach McDonald and I and his wife and Maggie, we're all, you know, we're all close. We're good friends. But at the same time, kind of like Sully, you know, when you play one another, it's like playing your brother. And, you know, the teams line up and it becomes very ferocious. So, yeah, we're looking forward to it. I know they are, too.
How did you decide on the barrel for the trophy?
It just became that just because of the, you know, the whiskey for the state of Tennessee and the bourbon for the state of Kentucky. So we started using a barrel as a way to identify the series too. So I can't recall who started it, but I don't know who it was, but it just became a thing, and we kind of like it now.
Now, you mentioned Dan McDonald. You guys do go back, what, early 90s when he played at the Citadel and you coached at Presbyterian, is that right?
Yeah, I don't know how you knew that, but that's true. Maybe we talked about it before, but you got a great memory. Yes, I mean, he was a little third baseman, freshman third baseman, when I was a first-year coach second-year coach at Presbyterian. And I remember playing on our home field, and I was coaching third base. He was at third base, and I just remember him as a young, little third baseman, scrappy, and he became a very good player, played on that College World Series team for Chalport, then became a coach there, and then left there to go to Ole Miss and was Mike Bianco's right-hand man for such a long period of time and really, really helped that program a tremendous amount, and then took over the reins at Louisville quite a while ago now, and in his first year, got them to the College World Series. So Max done a great job. He's a great coach, a great motivator, and certainly good for the college game.
I was amazed over the weekend. I asked you about a guy I ran into at Florida who you had run across here at Vanderbilt when he was doing his residency up here, and you gave me every detail about him when he was playing high school ball in the 90s. Do you find it easier to remember players from way back than maybe some more recent times, or are you able to kind of keep them all separated from one another?
Well, I can keep them separated to some degree, but I mean, I think that's the trait of an old person. You remember way back probably because you don't want to let that time go and you want to recover it. So that's kind of how my memory works too. But you know, with baseball players, I'm not a bright guy, but the thing I do remember is just a lot of baseball facts. And I remember players really well, just based on where they were, their numbers, what they were wearing for a uniform, and just been very fortunate to do this for a while where you look back and, you know, I came into coaching when Alex Rodriguez and Josh Booty were first round picks and were high school kids. So I got to see Alex Rodriguez as a high school kid, and I got to see Josh Booty, who was a famous baseball player back then, but then his football took him to LSU and a quarterback. And,
yep.
You know, that's one of those things where it goes all the way back then. I still have the files. I still have game results on those guys. And when I start reading about those guys again, it's good because it gives you comparisons of players and what you've seen before. And it makes for a pretty good situation. But that's probably my only claim to fame is a little bit of a memory, and that's about it.
One more quick one on that. You mentioned Alex Rodriguez, and take all the stuff about him out of it. Even going back to when you saw him play as a kid, is he about as talented as anybody you've seen on a baseball field?
Yeah, I was going to say the best. I mean, there's a lot of players you saw as amateurs and you thought, wow, that guy could end up being the best, and he did. He was just tall, very athletic, played, could hit, could do everything. And the other guy, and now I saw this guy in college that I thought was the best outfielder I'd ever laid eyes on, was J.D. Drew when he was at Florida State. I thought he was one of the most impressive players. You talk about five tool guys. I mean, there were five legitimate tools, and he was refined too. So it was kind of a luxury that he went to school because he wasn't supposed to, but he ends up being an All-American in his freshman, sophomore, and junior year, maybe one of the greatest college players to ever play. And I would say that behind those guys, this is an unfortunate story. I feel like the best player that I felt had an opportunity to come to Vanderbilt was Ryan Westmoreland. And the Boston Red Sox drafted him in the fifth round and gave him well over $2 million. But I thought when we were getting him, that was the best amateur player that Vanderbilt was going to get at the time. Tremendous talent, and he had a brain aneurysm and a lot of troubles. And Ryan's now coaching, but it was just such an unfortunate situation because I think Boston felt like he was going to be the next great one too.
We've gotten plenty of good ones over the years. It's been fun to watch this season, and looking forward to tomorrow. Tim, thanks as always. Really appreciate the time.
Yeah, you're a good man. Thank you, Kevin.
All right, have a good one. Coach Tim Corbin joining us here on Commodore Hour. Always great to catch up with the coach and talk about a little bit of everything. And his memory of these players is unbelievable. When we come back, we'll have Coach Darren Ambrose from Vanderbilt Soccer. Their team finished up with a tough loss to Penn State in the NCAA tournament over the weekend. But we'll talk about the season, which was kind of split in two parts with Coach Ambrose. He's coming up next. We continue. This is Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Great to have you with us for this edition of Commodore Hour on a nice Monday night in the Music City. We bring in Vanderbilt soccer coach Darren Ambrose. His team finished up the season with a 2-0 loss to Penn State in the second round of the NCAA tournament over in Cary, North Carolina over the weekend. But it was a fantastic season, one that was very challenging, and included, though, an SEC tournament championship back last fall for the first time since 1994. Coach Ambrose, how are you doing this evening?
Hey, Kevin. I'm doing good. How are you?
You're doing fine. Great to speak with you. You said after the game you were really pleased with the effort. Just a little about that part of the match on Saturday first.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously sports is about outcomes as well, and we all look at wins and championships, and that's certainly what we're doing. But I think the big thing in performances for me, and we talk about our performance in training and trying to be consistent, and if you have consistent performances over time, I think you win more than you lose. And our performance against Penn State, who, you know, quite frankly, should have been seeded. In fact, if you look at the bracket, they had the SEC champions, they had the Big Ten champions, and the ACC champions all in the same quadrant. Mm. So the game we played should probably have been a Sweet 16 or an Elite Eight game, to be honest with you. But Penn State are very, very good. You know, we carried the first half. We hit the bar. We should have probably been up by a goal or two by halftime. I just thought we played the game in every way the way I would hope we could play except score. And the second half, you know, legs started to fail us. And part of the problem was we were only able to play two games in 8 weeks leading up to that game. And as you well know, if you're not playing games, 90-minute games, physiologically it's very difficult to prepare for game legs and get your aerobic systems right. And that was the biggest fear we had going in, was if the game went deep and we were chasing the game or we're trying to find a goal late to win it, would we have the legs? And that, you know, unfortunately proved to be the case against a clinical, you know, well-coached Penn State team. But still think the effort and training for so long without games, that the kids showed up, poured everything in that they had left in the tank. And I, as a coach, I just think you can't ask for more than that.
Yeah, there's not really hope. Not really a whole lot you can do to sort of simulate that, isn't it? If you haven't played those games and you step out there and you're playing in a pressure spot like that.
Yeah. And you know, we played 11v11, and, you know, people may ask, and I know a lot of teams did this, you know, but for us, we averaged 16 days between games for our last three games. And the last game we played on April 11th against Duke, who were, you know, again, a top 10 team, we tied 0-0 on the road. And then it was a 21-day layoff between that game and the second round of the NCAA tournament. So you can't replicate it. Even in 11v11 situations, when you're playing in a squad, it's just not the same. So I think dealing with that really was our biggest challenge. It wasn't even the opponent, in my opinion. I just think it was trying to put it in a position that we could be as fit as we could be, and yet still knowing we were going to have to deal with, you know, that level of competition, having averaged, you know, what, a game every 17 days.
I mentioned earlier you won the first SEC tournament championship since 94 for this program.
Yeah.
I know everybody wants to go farther in the NCAA tournament, but did it almost feel like icing on the cake after winning that tournament last fall in a league that's always so tough?
Yeah, I mean, the blessing and the curse of being in the NCAA tournament and knowing you're in the NCAA tournament on November 22nd is that the NCAA tournament wasn't until May. So trying to, if you think about that for a second, trying to keep focus and manage the rhythm of a 5 months with a body clock that's completely inverse of what you're used to, having our kids switched on, and we managed it differently. I mean, obviously, we took more days off. We tried to build up training, but really in a 10-month season, it was, look, let's go. You know, our goal was to, certainly our goal was to be Sweet 16. That was, you know, minimum of getting to Sweet 16. That was what we felt we were capable of. And to be fair, had we not run into a team like Penn State, who should have been seeded, I think we could have done it. I mean, there are other games in the tournament that were being won 7-0 and 6-2, and here we are, you know, in a game with a Big Ten champion. So, yeah, it was something that was a long time coming. It took forever to arrive. But this team, the personality of this team, the senior group, have always had their eyes on going a little further. You know, we've been in four consecutive tournaments. We've been to the second round three times. And, you know, I think if you look at that curve and the history we've got, that's a pretty steep curve. But now we're up there. We've always felt that we're capable of being into that next level, which is, you know, Sweet 16. You know, that was the goal ultimately. And I think you've got to keep knocking on the door. You have to keep showing up in the second round. You got to keep banging away, and eventually you get a program that establishes itself as this is, we're always here. And then you get this to the Sweet 16, and then you're there for a couple, three times. I think that's how you build, and I think we're on that path. This year the draw didn't help, and, you know, hey, COVID pandemic and the schedule we had was just made that even more difficult than it would have been.
I guess the soccer coach, Darren Ambrose. Now, you're talking about that senior class. I mean, you're talking about some of the greats in this program's history, Haley Hopkins, Matty Elwell, Layla Azaria, and some others. Now, under the rules, are good chance of quite a few of those players coming back for another season?
Yeah, we certainly hope so. In fact, we'll probably have an announcement here after graduation. There's obviously a lot of things being worked out, last-minute details, but we're certainly hopeful that those girls will be around, if not all of them, and certainly several of them are planning on staying. You know, and we'll make that official as soon as we can. But certainly, that I think they still feel that there's still another level for them to attain. I think they still feel, even this year, as difficult as it was, and we're all kind of taking a big deep breath now and trying to get some time away. But I feel that in the back of their minds, that group, you know, are looking at, you know, we're capable. You know, that's still the goal, is let's make that next level in the NCAA tournament. And I think, you know, with them back and hopefully all coming back, that gives us a little bit of a jump into that process.
You typically do play some games in the spring, but how short will this offseason feel after playing into the first weekend of May?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that. This is my first day, and it's been full of other things that I actually was not expecting to be dealing with. But yeah, that's a genuine question, and I think if you spoke to, you know, some of those seniors kids who have been on since July 20 something last year, you know, this is going to feel short, and a part of our job is to manage the rhythm when we come back. Certainly for the next 6 weeks or so, they're off. You know, I hope they don't touch a soccer ball. They're not going to be doing a whole lot of anything. Some will be in school. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting turnaround for teams that played in the NCAA tournament, for sure. The teams that have gone to the first week of May, and to be honest, it's really going to be a different calendar for all of us. So I think our biggest priority will be managing the emotion and the physical side of this, the physiological side of their return in August. And, you know, certainly we want to build up slowly. So we're ready come November time.
You know, when you look back on this season, whether it's, you know, a few weeks down the road or a few years down the road, how will the accomplishments of this year sort of take on a different meaning with COVID and all of those different things you talked about that went on in 2020?
I mean, I don't know there are words that are accurately described this year and this last cycle. There have been so many challenges that go with it that are unspoken, and you know, we're not just talking about wearing a mask. I think the emotional content of this year for everybody, our kids who are at an age where social life is critical and central to their development, that was removed. The idea of being in Zoom classes for 8 months, the pressures that came with it, as combined with the obvious, which was masks, protocols, processes, weird travel arrangements, the whole thing. At the end of the day, on Saturday after we lost to Penn State, I tried to put it in context for them that at the end of the day, I think this year has proven to every single one of us that we're stronger mentally and emotionally than we realize, that we can handle far more of life than we actually realize we're capable of. And I think that's what this year showed me. For me personally, you know, I think we've all struggled, and I would certainly put myself right in the middle of that with different issues. I know our kids did. I know my staff did. But still to be able to sit there in May, you know, still standing up and still playing and having had some degree of success in terms of the, you know, the rings and hardware. But to do that, what we managed to in order to get there is so significant. And I think it just proves that as human beings, we really are more resilient than sometimes we, you know, we even give ourselves credit for, to be honest with you. So I think that's what I've taken from this year. You know, that's part of it for me. And hopefully that, you know, maybe we can use that to remind ourselves in the future when things are more normal and we still feel stress and pressure that, you know, hey, remember when, you know, remember we had to deal with this and we did it. So surely we can do this now. And I think that's what I'll take out of the year.
Yeah, well said, for sure. On a different note, as we finish up, you know, I drive down 440 or 65, and I see the new soccer stadium, you know, rising from over at the fairgrounds. You know, for a guy who's been around the game as long as you have, that has to be exciting to see right here in Nashville.
I am beyond. I mean, honestly, I'm not joking. I'm just speaking with them today about buying my season tickets for the new stadium. I'm thrilled. I mean, I went to a game last week, and I full credit to, you know, to that organization and how they have already got a following and a tremendous fan base. I think people are really passionate about what is happening. I know Gary Smith personally. He lives five doors away from me. I think he does an awesome job. I think they're going to have, when that stadium opens, I think that's going to be the ticket. I think what we know from the Preds and how, you know, that kind of following and the success, I really feel that to John Ingram's credit and Ian Eyre, they've got this thing rolling, and I'm excited to be a soccer person in this city, as well as to be a consumer. I'm basically someone who's going to buy season tickets, and I just can't wait, because I think it'll be an event, not just a game. It's going to be a soccer event, not just a soccer game. So I'm thrilled. I can't wait for that stadium to open and hopefully get some more games over at Nissan Stadium as well this summer.
Maybe some of the rowdies can come over and hang out at your matches, huh? Man, they turn up the atmosphere a little bit.
Yeah, we're hoping that somehow as we get going, I mean, to be fair, when pre-pandemic, we did have a few people show up, you know, with drums and things at a couple of games, and it was an enormous difference. You know, we had 1,000, 1,200 people at a lot of games in 2019. It seems weird saying that right now in 2019.
It does, doesn't it? Yep.
And I can't wait, you know, for this fall. And hopefully, you know, yeah, I think it's not unrealistic to think that we saw that in 2019, and maybe we, you know, we capitalize on that, and we see some of those guys in our stands come this fall. When I think everyone is just excited to the potential of returning to full capacity crowds and live sports. I know I am.
Darren, thanks so much. Congratulations again on a terrific and very challenging season. I'll always enjoy the time with you.
Yeah, Kevin, thank you so much. And here's to, you know, to talking again this fall when we are all living life to its fullest again.
Sounds good. Thank you. It's Coach Darren Ambrose joining us here on Commodore Hour. His team wrapped up the season in the NCAA tournament back on Saturday, but of course they are the SEC champions after winning that tournament title down in Orange Beach back last fall. When we come back, we'll have our Black and Gold Club segment. Always like to feature a Vanderbilt Athletics alum. And tonight we'll have Ken Hammond, who played football from 1978 through 81 and was drafted by the Dallas Cowboys in 1982. He's going to be our guest coming up next as we continue with Commodore Hour, the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us. Great conversations tonight. First with Tim Corbin and then with Darren Ambrose just a moment ago. Our alumni segment this week, we have a Vanderbilt football alum, Ken Hammond. He played from 1978 through 1981 and was a sixth-round draft pick by the Dallas Cowboys in 1982. An Alabama native, and Ken joins us tonight. Ken, what's going on?
Kevin, everything is going good here in beautiful Valley Head, Alabama, brother. Just trying to keep our population around 500 people, as always.
How many stoplights you got going on there?
We don't. We, back in 71, I think, they put two caution lights in, and the local kids would ride their bicycles over and hang out under. That was their excitement, and they're still the only two caution lights or lights we have in town.
There you go. Have you been to the golf course today?
I took the day off. It was raining a little bit, so I decided not to go up and plow the field today.
Now, I mentioned earlier, you were the draft pick by the Dallas Cowboys in 1982. You know, we saw the draft over the weekend. Does that take you back to that time in your life?
It does. You know what? We had a kid here from DeKalb County. He kicked for Florida, and he went fifth to Cincinnati. So he's been the first kid since I went in 82. And I know the family, or I know, you know, people that know him. And I said, the two highlights that you get from sports is when you get your first D1 college offer. And then when that phone rings on draft day, man, it's a beautiful thing.
How exciting for you was it to be chosen by the Cowboys, who are, you know, they're still popular now, but they were hugely popular back then. Big stars, Danny White and Tony Dorsett and Drew Pearson and, you know, Too Tall Jones and Randy White, Harvey Martin, Everson Walls. I mean, I can name them off even now, but how exciting was it to be chosen by that particular team?
It was literally a dream come true. I mean, growing up, you know, I was a Cowboys fan, as most kids were, or a lot of kids anyway, back then. And, you know, to their credit, I broke my ankle. I was supposed to go late first, early second. So I broke my ankle a week before we opened up with Maryland. And then I was back playing on it 3 weeks later, played the whole year, went into the Blue Gray game, played at the East-West Shrine. So we're practicing for the Senior Bowl. And I was already, you know, have been told that I'd pulled myself back up to a late first, early second. And when I broke it in the Senior Bowl for the second time in 4 months, you know, Dallas takes me in sixth. And I'll be honest with you, man, to this day, I thank God for them. I got my feelings hurt, you know, that I didn't go early, but yeah. Sixth round was a decent round. And you talk about a class organization, everything that people may have heard about Coach Landry and the whole organization, they were top shelf, man.
People always think of Tom Landry as sort of that stoic coach with a fedora. What was your experience with him like?
He treated everybody the same. Again, I'm out there about the fourth week of camp or third week of camp. They were going out to Thousand Oaks. So I break my ankle for the third time in less than a year. And so I spent, the rest of my career hobbling around with an ankle. If you were Tony Dorsett or if you were Ken Hammond on injured reserve, he treated everybody the same.
Can I ask you the same question about your college coach, Coach McIntyre? What made him successful?
I had Coach Pankos in 78. And really what happened with Coach McIntyre, and obviously a great coach and helped turn the program around, but we had a core of kids that came in. Whit Taylor was in my freshman class. And I saw this my freshman year with Coach Pankos. I started defense my freshman year, but as soon as we'd get behind, a little bit on the scoreboard, you'd start seeing those heads going down in the huddle. And me and guys like Whit Taylor and Wayman Bugs and Jimmy Arnold and all these guys that ended up playing together, and we said, screw that. We are going to just start kicking butt. And, like being an offensive lineman, you really can't do much more than block the guy that you're supposed to block. And once everybody started taking care of their position, first of all, it just started snowballing. And to Coach Mack's credit, man, he made everybody believe that we could win. And the year after I left in 81, 82, we go to a bowl game.
Yeah. Ken Hammond is our guest, a former Vanderbilt football player. And that was kind of leading to my next question. How did your final season in 81 at Vandy sort of set the stage for that special year when the team went 8-4 and made a bowl?
Yeah, we went 4-7 the year before, 81. We went 4-7 and beat Ole Miss. Should have beat Kentucky. There were a lot of shoulda, wouldas that could have gone either way. But and I'm hoping and praying to God this happens with Coach Lee. I know, we're starting at the bottom, but once these kids realize that this group of guys they're playing with are going to be their best friends for life, and once they start seeing that they can win, that's how it starts. And us going 4-7, I know that's a bad year for a lot of schools, but that let everybody know that we were on the board.
Ken, how important is it for Vanderbilt, or I guess any program for that matter, to stay connected with his former players? And you've seen that from Coach Lee already.
It's huge. It's growing up in Alabama, it's 98% Auburn or Alabama, and there's only me and a couple other people in this area that went to Vanderbilt. You've got generation after generation of built-in connections with the Auburn and Alabamas and Mississippi State. So what I'm seeing with technology is the reason that I'm having this conversation with you, or I'm talking with Chris or other guys. Technology has let us come together as a group, and I'm excited. I mean, if you grow up in downtown Nashville, or if you live in New York, as you know, it costs the same to go to school. So I'm really digging what they're doing and reaching out. And it's a brotherhood. I mean, I made the joke earlier today with a guy. I said, I'm so old, y'all are about going to have to talk to me through a Ouija board or a seance. But once I'm talking to these kids that played 10 years ago, 20 years ago, we're brothers, man.
Well, glad we were able to catch up with you on the phone and not have to do a seance or anything. Ken, we appreciate the time. All the best to you, and hope we can catch up with you again down the road.
Hey, anytime, brother, and anchor down, baby, and let's get this thing going.
Sounds good. He's Ken Hammond. He played football at Vanderbilt from 1978 through 81 and was a sixth-round pick by the Dallas Cowboys in 1982. And if not for some bad injury luck, would have been higher than that. So appreciate him joining us tonight. We'll come back and wrap things up on Commodore Hour in just a moment to the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back. Finishing up this edition of Commodore Hour on a lovely Monday night in Nashville. Thanks to our producer, Steve Goldberg, and also David Janes, taking great care of us here at the Game Studios in Nashville. A little bit of news if you're just tuning in. Vanderbilt baseball game tomorrow at Louisville. The time has been changed. It's been moved up 3 hours. 3 o'clock Central, 4 o'clock Eastern for the Commodores and Cardinals. The Battle of the Barrel with some bad weather in the forecast in Louisville. Hopefully we can still get the game in. But 3 o'clock Central time is the new start tomorrow for Vanderbilt and Louisville. Of course, a matchup of highly ranked teams. A couple other notes. Women's tennis found out its destination for the NCAA tournament. The Commodores will be in Columbus, Ohio, which seems to be a popular destination, against Ball State. That'll be 10 a.m. on Friday. So women's tennis against Ball State Friday in Columbus at Ohio State, which is the higher seed in that region. So 10 a.m. start for that match coming up. All the best to the women's tennis program. Women's golf also will be playing in Columbus next Monday through Wednesday in the NCAA regional as the number 6 seed. Men's golf will play in the NCAA regionals in a couple weeks. That'll be in nearby Kingston Springs, Tennessee. Of course, won the SEC championship last week against Arkansas. Lacrosse will be in Gainesville for the American Conference tournament against 4-seeded Temple on Thursday in the semifinals. We mentioned soccer finishing up the season in the NCAA tournament against Penn State back on Saturday. So a whole lot going on. We've had a fun time on the show tonight. Thanks again to our guests, Tim Corbin and Darren Ambrose and Ken Hammond. Kevin Ingram saying good night from Nashville. This has been Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College.